This is the KDNK local newscast for Wednesday morning, February 8th. I'm Gavin Dahl. KDNK's Eye on Crime looks at recent police activity in Carbondale and Eagle County.
Carbondale police received 445 calls for service between January 20th and February 2nd and made 8 arrests. Around 7:30 in the morning on January 24th, a juvenile was arrested for misdemeanor criminal mischief for tagging a building along Highway 82. The same teen was arrested for felony criminal mischief later that day and was taken to the Grand Mesa Youth Facility in Grand Junction. The day before, a juvenile at Roaring Fork High School was summoned for minor in possession of alcohol on school grounds. Other arrests included 2 DUIDs, 2 driving under revocation, 1 harassment, 1 arrest for possession of a controlled substance with intent to distribute, and 1 theft arrest. In Eagle County, on February 1st, sheriff deputies responded to a report of a sexual assault in Minturn. An 18-year-old man was subsequently arrested on charges of sexual assault, second-degree burglary, criminal mischief, and harassment. A 31-year-old man was also arrested on 4 charges of contributing to the delinquency of a minor. On February 2nd, a jury in Eagle acquitted 2 teenage boys of sexual assault after a 2-week trial. The boys were accused of having sex with a girl against her will on New Year's Eve. Prosecutors said the girl was too drunk to knowingly consent to sex, but the defense said the alcohol did not take effect until after the sex, according to media reports. That's it for this week's Eye on Crime. I'm Amy Haddon Marsh.
Carbondale Rec Director Jeff Jackal retired last week after 16 years in town leadership. I spoke to him at his retirement party at Town Hall.
Of all of the long, long list of accomplishments in your decade and a half of service to this town, what was actually the hardest of the things you got done, or what was the one that got away?
Well, Gavin, the project that really got away from me was the last project was the pickleball courts for the seniors. And it wasn't an expensive Taj Mahal project, but it was still going to cost $100,000 to build 4 pickleball courts. And I wish I could have accomplished that. Going back to your original question in regards to a project that was difficult to accomplish, and that was probably putting together collaboration partners with the Gateway River Park. Because it involves so many different partners with the lottery funds through GOCO, the Colorado Game and Fish Department, which is now called Colorado Parks and Wildlife, and the town,
Rafta,
and just acquiring that property was a long process, but we ended up acquiring it, and we wrote some grants and got it done, and so it was fun. It was a great project to finish up.
What's your advice to the kind of future recreation leaders in the Valley?
Well, obviously it's money. That's the biggest thing that we're going to have to wrestle with in years to come in building our town's sales tax base. And I think with City Market coming on board and with the revenues we're going to generate from City Market and then paying off the debt service, we still have 7 more years left on the rec center. And I think once that happens in about 7 years, we're going to be sitting financially in a position to go after some of these larger GOCO grants to be able to fund some of the larger projects that I was fortunate to fund early in my career. When I came in 2001, before the recession, it was a boom. We were sitting on $250,000 in rec sales tax reserves. We depleted that with the rec center, but now there's going to be a bright future for Carbondale, and the town's so pro-recreation. It was when I was here in 2001. It still is today, and I think what Eric's going to be doing is biting off those little small projects that we can afford, and we can go after these mini grants with Federal Mineral Lease District monies from Garfield County and GOCO funds with the mini grant program they have. And in fact, Eric's already working on a project right now with a brand new rodeo picnic shelter that's going to be built there at the rodeo grounds. And we're working with a private family who's going to help fund that project. And that's going to be built probably by the time the rodeo starts this summer.
So that's kind of one last piece of the overhaul of the rodeo space that you've been able to make happen.
That is. You know, we've got the new roof over the bleachers, and we're working on the announcer's booth. That's going to be going up here in the next 30 days. And then this last little piece, Eric's going to try to get in place by the rodeo, will be that picnic shelter out at the rodeo grounds.
And one last question. You said that all of your institutional memory won't really be going away, even though you're retiring. But between now and when we see you at another Parks and Rec Commission meeting down the road, what's your plan?
Well, my plan is to travel. I'm going to head to Hawaii. I have airline reservations March 2nd. I'm going to be there for a couple weeks, and then I'm going to get back, and I'm going to ski for a week with my son over his college spring break, and then I'm heading to Arizona for a month. I'm going to come back to Carbondale the 1st of May for a week to check on my place, and then I'm heading to California. And I'm going to get back for the most beautiful time of the year, June, July. And then following Mountain Fair, I'm going to go see my other son, Liz, in New York. And it's just going to be a great time traveling in the future with an RV that I bought. So I'm looking forward to it, Gavin.
Well, you've certainly earned the vacation time, and congratulations on your retirement.
Thank you very much.
Among other achievements, Jeff Jackal led the development of Carbondale's rec center, the skateboard park, the dog park and other parks, the community garden, the bread oven shelter, the Gateway RV campground, and improvements to the rodeo arena. About 50 people rallied outside the state capitol Tuesday to urge Congress not to derail the Affordable Care Act, Benta Berkland reports.
Progressive groups are planning a cross-country bus tour called Save My Care. They argue that if the Affordable Care Act is repealed, more than 500,000 people in Colorado would lose health care coverage.
Save our care! Save our care! Save our care!
Hey, there's a hearing today at 2 o'clock in...
The hearing was on a bill to repeal the state health care exchange and move Colorado to the federal exchange. Kathy Henson is from Thornton. Her husband is a custom home builder. She attended the rally and says before the Affordable Care Act, her family paid $1,000 each month in premiums and had a high deductible.
And we felt always on the fringe and always about on the verge of losing our health care. And we are no longer spending more than our mortgage on health care for the first time.
Connect for Health, in my opinion, is extremely and unnecessarily expensive to the Colorado taxpayer.
Republican Senator Jim Smallwood from Parker is the sponsor of Senate Bill 3. While he supports some parts of the federal law, he says he's driven by the high cost of the state's exchange and its inability to stay afloat financially without tax credits and grants.
Connect for Health has not proven to be successful per the intent of the original act, which was, and I quote, to increase access, affordability, and choice.
The exchange is how some people pay for health insurance on the individual market. Some states never created their own exchanges. Other states, such as Oregon, Kentucky, and Nevada, have moved away from a state exchange to the federal one. Kevin Patterson is the CEO of the state exchange, Connect for Health Colorado. He says switching would be costly.
We commissioned a study that our board did review. We had estimated those costs being in the $23 million range.
But Republican Senator Owen Hill of Colorado Springs says the nonpartisan fiscal analysis puts the costs of switching much lower.
You're telling me $23 million. They're telling me just over $4 million. How is there $23 million in cost in buying from healthcare.gov instead of Colorado's current website?
Senator Hill, welcome to my world. When you are dealing with the federal government and you're trying to do something that you think might be a simple process, what you are given in terms of the requirements that are built into your system because it's healthcare information. I'm just telling you what the costs have been for my colleagues.
After nearly 4 hours of testimony from people mostly talking about the benefits of the Affordable Care Act, Bill's sponsor, Jim Smallwood, said several times that his proposal wouldn't change federal law.
Senate Bill 3 does not repeal the ACA. It does not repeal the Affordable Care Act. It does not end Obamacare. It does not cancel anybody's insurance policies. It does not change anybody's insurance policies. It does not end federal subsidies that help our citizens pay for their insurance policies. And it does not in any way roll back Medicaid expansion.
One of those to testify was Nancy Hall. She says the measure doesn't deal with the underlying cost drivers that cause premiums to go up and health insurance providers to leave the exchange.
Health insurance has gotten obscenely expensive. It's not affordable. There are a lot of problems with the system. However, my problem with this bill is that it does not address any of those problems.
While Colorado lawmakers tried to keep politics out of the debate with an issue this political, it's nearly impossible. That's something Democratic Senate Minority Leader Lucia Guzman noted in her closing remarks.
Because even though we don't want to be political here, our fear is connected to the national movement right now.
President Donald Trump and the Republican-controlled Congress say they are acting with urgency to repeal and replace Obamacare. It's still not clear when that will happen or what will replace it. Many opponents are concerned about the timing.
Why would we waste all those tax dollars to undo, find out that we're changing everything at the federal level, and then have to redo?
Democratic Senator Lois Cord of Denver says the bill is premature. But Republican Senator Jack Tate of Centennial says the national discussion makes the measure even more timely.
I'm glad we're talking about it now rather than next year.
The bill passed on a party-line vote and now heads to the Senate Appropriations Committee. I'm Benta Berkland at the State Capitol.
The Army Corps of Engineers on Tuesday granted an easement for the completion of the Dakota Access Pipeline. The easement will allow construction under the Missouri River at Lake Oahe near the Standing Rock Sioux Reservation in North Dakota. Energy Transfer Partners, the company building the pipeline, does not need any further federal approvals, and the Army will seek a waiver for the usual two-week waiting period between congressional notification and construction. Lawyers for Dakota Access said in U.S. District Court Monday that once the final federal easement is in place, the company could move oil through the pipeline in 2 months. More than 200 groups and individuals have signed an amicus brief urging a federal court to uphold the Clean Water Rule. Eric Galatis reports.
Colorado's clean water is a valuable commodity for thousands of businesses across the state, including New Belgium Brewing in Fort Collins. The fourth largest craft brewery in the U.S. is one of 234 businesses that joined an amicus brief this week, urging a federal court to uphold the Clean Water Rule finalized in 2015. Jen Vervier with New Belgium says since beer is 90% water, federal protections have been critical for the craft brewing industry.
Almost all of Colorado's drinking water is supplied by intermittent ephemeral or headwater streams. That's why this issue is so important in Colorado. And the brewing industry is hugely important in Colorado, too.
Last month, the U.S. Supreme Court agreed to hear the case challenging the Clean Water Rule, which more clearly defines what is covered under the Clean Water Act. At least 10 Colorado businesses joined the appeal. The brief was filed in the Sixth Circuit Court of Cincinnati by the Environment America Research and Policy Center and the American Sustainable Business Council. Richard Eidlin with the American Sustainable Business Council explains why clean water is a business issue.
We really wanted to make the court aware of the business case for having these rules in place. Let's have appropriate regulations and standards to ensure consistent quality of water, and that way we can save money in the future.
Vervier adds that recent developments under the Trump administration add further complications for businesses that count on clean water.
Businesses depend on clarity and regulation in order to plan and in order to succeed. And we're a little bit worried right now with all the tumult going on around the EPA and water and climate. It destabilizes, and we worry that it moves the country in the wrong direction as far as preserving our natural resources.
According to the Environment America Research and Policy Center, implementing the Clean Water Rule would generate over $400 million annually in economic benefits, and more than 80% of small business owners support implementation of the rule. For KDNK, I'm Eric Galatis.